contact you, you can get my class.
Sure, if they let you in, I guess you're in.
Yeah, I should say jazz about you. Okay.
Okay, good.
All right.
Thanks, Peter.
Would you know now what you're going to be doing in this class on the 20th?
I wouldn't know the 20th. Why?
Because I found out I have to miss a class for my new job.
Oh.
Just that one day.
I seriously doubt there'll be any tests or anything like that.
Lecture that I can pick up on tape.
Yeah.
I got out of the rest of the day that I thought.
That's understandable. Where's everybody at? Bell rang. Are you going to make this the whole semester? Are you going to make this the whole semester? In April. Of April? 15th of May is Keith Slover's birthday. Beware the Ides of May. Slover will be 33. Signify your presence by a yay or something. Jana Annable, Anita Austin, Terry Britton, Tracy Buxton, Denise Carpenter, Bob, Robin, Daryl, Lynette, Anita Ferguson, Adrienne, Joanne, Diane, Brad, Sue, Marion, Greg, Carol Gensler, Mark, Annette, Corey, Carol Kinsler, Rob, Betsy, Barbara, Rita, Philip, you may call me Mr. Boker, sir. Doris, Anita, Shelley, Mars, Bob, Keith, Tom. One, two, three, four, five, six. Who are you? Oh, you came in late. You know how I feel about late arriving personages. Now we'll count again. One, two, three, four, five, six. I only say that to you two. Six people are gone. Seven. One, two. I have to seat you differently. That's all there is to it. They're not here today. We lost Gerhard to the grad program, which isn't, I mean, that's okay. Because he may not make it back next year. And so, you know, I give Mike a few now and then. After all, I lost Mike Saban to the grad program. But, so, we got to reseat you. How shall we do this? And Tom Wilson is added to the tenor section. So we'll probably put Tom right there. And Rob Lilly's supposed to be here. And Bob White, or Weiss, however he says his name, Weiss. They misspelled it. I think you misspelled it. Where's she at? She dropped out too, Sandy Widener. Well, she dropped out today. She may be back by Friday. Just talked about that. So we can't have you all sitting in a line. That won't do it all. Do something different. Rita, what do you sing? Soprano, alto. We'll put you next to Doris, right there. And now, gentlemen, let's see what we'll do. For today, let's put Mr. Ferdin in the front row in the corner. And let's move Mr. Sotomayor and Mr. Wilson to the front row and move you guys down next to tenors. Hey, here comes T. Wilson. You can sit on the other side of Mr. Kaler. Nah, it's his first day. Right over there, next to Corey, Tom. Okay. For those of you who are new this semester, I'll basically ignore you and talk to everybody else. You missed a wonderful semester last semester. We had such a good time. As your grades will reflect, the curve on your assignment actually came out quite good. It was a real good curve, a real clear curve. And so I was basically pleased with the assignment. Some of you did better than expected, and some of you didn't do as well as expected. But your grade, some of your grades, absences nailed some of you in this class as far as your grade. And in case you're unaware, and you shouldn't be unaware, but if you didn't read your student guidebook, to miss an announced test is a full letter grade drop. To just, even if you're run over by a truck and in traction at Highline Hospital, it's still a full grade drop when you make it up. Full letter grade drop. Not 12-point scale, but 3 points on a 12-point scale. So if you got an A minus on the test, you got a B minus. Well, that can hurt you in the final grade when there's only three grades. And that's the most important one. So, and also absences. In this class, even though you make up absences, they will begin to lower your grade point after so many because it's a participation class. So absences got some of you. And that's just the way it goes. Don't, if you are sad about your grade, don't worry about it. If you're happy about your grade, wonderful. So, this semester that we're going to begin in a new area of expression, which is perfect jumping off from what we finished off last semester with. Because what we decided, if you remember, during those assignments was that slow songs, you didn't really have very much in your repertoire to do with slow songs. Because we had done mostly fast songs, right? And it takes a whole lot more musicianship to express a slow song than it does a fast one, at least in Pentecostal circles. So we're going to talk about some of the mechanical tools of expression, plus we're going to learn some slow material to help you learn how to use these tools. And there are a few tools we're going to begin to learn first. The most obvious ones in expression are these. First of all, the crescendo and decrescendo. That's spelled C-R-E-S-C-E-N-D-O. And D-E-C-R-E-S-C-E-N-D-O. And they're opposites of each other. They're Italian terms, as most musical terminology is Italian. And later in the semester you will be learning a large glossary of Italian terms, which you will have to memorize. which are more common ones that you may hear or see as you are around doing music. And like if you're leading a small music ministry team someplace and you get a rather good musician in there, maybe it's your accompanist or something, and he may say, do you want that a little more rubato? You don't want to stand there and act totally ignorant in front of your music ensemble like,
what's rubato?
You don't want to do that. So we're going to give you that terminology so at least you can remember. Now what you do in a case like that, incidentally, this is leadership training, what you do in a case like that, if you're a rather classy pianist, says, excuse me, Brother Ferdin, do you want that more rubato in that section? You go, well, let me think. And you can't remember for the life of you what rubato means, right? You go, let me think. Now, play it for me the way you would do it, more rubato. And then you decide if you like the way you played it or not. And then that night you go home and look up in your glossary what rubato means. That's what you do. Now, don't ever tell anybody that you did that. It helps. You've got to think on your feet sometimes. Because I'll tell you something. If somebody comes along that's a pretty hotshot musician, newly saved, and most of your groups, you know, newly saved or newly out of the Brethren Church or something, and you know, you're just new out there. You're only 3 months out there, and you know, they love the leader and that sort of thing, and, you know, you're in... Let's see, what lovely town are you in? Kalamazoo, Michigan. And that's where Gibson guitars are made, Kalamazoo, Michigan. And it's just a new bunch of people, and they don't, you know, they're a core group all right, but you don't have the solid, united, behind you no matter what situation that I'm blessed with. Now, I can be totally ignorant and nobody cares. They know, they trust me enough to know that I'll figure it out sooner or later. But when you're out there, you really can't do that. You really can't do that because you get this hotshot penis come along or whatever, and good. You need God to send you fine musicians. That's, you do. And you can't be threatened by these individuals. You got to know how to handle them. Now, this guy come in, and he's, you know, newly saved. Maybe he was a jazz pianist or something or other. But interestingly enough, he can, and the devil can use him to destroy the unity in your group and destroy the support behind you. Because all you have to do is make about 12 mistakes that everybody knows are mistakes. And then all he has to do is pick them up and solve, you know, bail you out. And pretty soon, the devil's going to put in everybody's mind, boy, we should have so-and-so as a music director, who's totally incapable as far as anointing, but he's got the musical class. And of course, you get musicians together, and maybe it's the first time, or maybe it's not the first time, but these people are together singing, and they really enjoy singing, and they become infatuated with the method of ministry more than the ministry. They really do. People do. I mean, when you start singing choral music, and something happens musically, you can have a very pleasurable sensation from that experience. And you can desire that pleasurable sensation to the point that the vehicle, you become infatuated with the vehicle. And that's really altogether too common. It's not the best motive, but it's altogether too common, and it's going to happen, and you have to know how to deal with it and direct people's affections toward the Lord and understand the ministry as a tool. We know all about that. But until they get to that place, their infatuation with the vehicle is going to lead them to draw conclusions based on that infatuation instead of conclusions based on what's the best for the anointing. Okay? So you've got to cover for yourself sometimes, and you utilize those people that know more than you do. Use them. But you use them for information, you use them for help, but you always maintain the proper order of things. And that is learned more on the field than it is in the classroom. Okay, crescendo and diminuendo. I'm going to mess up your notes here for everyone who's taking notes. Crescendo is defined gradually growing louder. And it's, I wish I had a chalkboard. It appears in music. Now, like this. You've all seen them. Two lines, non-parallel lines that start at a point and then widen out as they go across the page. Most of you know what a crescendo looks like. Decrescendo is just the opposite. It starts wide and goes down to a point across the page. And a decrescendo is to gradually become softer. And crescendo may appear in music either as these lines that widen out, flare out like a, I don't know, like a one of those, you know? And or by the, in a bold italic abbreviation, C-R-E-S-C, period. And that abbreviation, in bold italic, lowercase, may appear at a particular point in the music, and that signifies a crescendo. Decrescendo is just the opposite, and as either appears in music as the lines coming together, or as D-E-C-R-E-S-C, period, lowercase, bold italic. And there is another phrase, diminuendo, D-I-M-I-N-U-E-N-D-O. Did you get that? D-I-M-I-N-U-E-N-D-O, diminuendo. Oh, diminuendo. Sound it out, spell it. Phonics and all that, you know? One nice thing about Italian, it's spelled just the way it sounds. There's not all the added attraction words like in English, or added attraction letters like in English. It's every vowel sound has a vowel. And every vowel has its own sound. We don't have very many diphthongs like we do. You would, each vowel is separate. Diminuendo. It also means to gradually grow softer. It's exactly the same musical happening as a decrescendo, with this exception. Decrescendo appears following a crescendo. Diminuendo happens. In other words, you have an established dynamic level. Maybe it's mezzo forte, and you'll learn what those mean later, which is medium loud or medium strong, which implies loudness, but is more than simply volume. It has to do with tonal structure and things. But say it's mezzo forte. Well, you're going along a mezzo forte, and you want your phrase to diminish in volume. So you incorporate diminuendo. If you crescendo, you don't diminuendo from a crescendo, you decrescendo from the crescendo back to the previously established dynamic level prior to the crescendo. Right? You following, Mr. Soderman? Right. Now, the next point of expression, and we'll teach you how to properly sing a crescendo and a diminuendo. We'll teach you how it's done, what to do. The next item under mechanical tools of expression is the general dynamic level that I just talked about. And it ranges from very soft to very loud. And where you establish that general dynamic level will determine what kind of expression you can do. So that's an important point. If you start real loud, there's not a whole lot of things you can do but holler. And a lot of people do just exactly that. Third point, mechanical tools, is emphasis, or the accent. Accents actually appear in music in three ways. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to tell you, because I don't have a chalkboard, so I won't. I won't tell you what those three ways are, but they do appear. Very rarely, I'll tell you later. You'll get this later. But very rarely in our music do we actually write in accents. But very frequently, I desire accents. And there is levels of accent, very hard accent, a subtle accent, a not-so-subtle accent. You know, there's varying levels of accent that you would place on a note, and different ways of creating accent vocally using consonants, or how would you have an accent when you start with a vowel and things like that. So how to properly execute different kinds of accents for different kinds of expression are a very important part of musical speech. And we talked about that during your assignment, that expression is musical speech. How to dynamically express what it is you're saying. And so if you would use the term during the acts, during the assignment, you really need to emphasize that word. You need to emphasize this word. You need to emphasize that word. Emphasize this word. Well, the only phrase you knew was, well, you need to emphasize this or you need to emphasize that. But the truth of the matter is each one of those words actually should have been emphasized differently from each other. See, if you use the exact same emphasis on every word you want emphasized, you end up sounding like an 8-cylinder engine. I mean, there's this grunting from word to word as you lay into the accented words and don't bother with the other ones. But each word is accented differently to create the shape of the musical sentence, right? Hello. You awake, Philip? Making sure. The fourth thing is the sforzando or forte piano. What did he just say? This is a technique that we actually use quite frequently around here, but not in the classical sense of the word. A sforzando, S-F-Z, no, S-F-O-R-Z-A-N-D-O, sforzando, S-F-O-R-Z-A-N-D-O. It appears in music as bold italics, lowercase, S, F, Z. And there's also F, Z, which is a lighter version, and S, F, F, Z, which is a very bodacious version. And what a sforzando is all of a sudden smash. You just hit it for all it's worth, and then come away from it. It's one of the most powerful, strong accents in music. The more frequent one that we use is a forte piano. It appears in lowercase, bold italics, F-P. And what that is hitting it good-sized and then coming away from it but maintaining a softer dynamic level. And we do that kind of expression all the time in a lot of our music. Quite frequently, laying into the beginning of a word to give it emphasis. It's more than just an accent, but it's hitting it, then coming off of it, and then building it again to create shape to the word that gives it emotion. Okay? And then the fifth area is using consonants as expressive tools, the consonantal beginnings of words as expressive tools. J's, D's, energizing consonants in such a way to use them as expressive tools. Singing the singing consonants, singing the M's and the N's. Milking them for all their worth when necessary. So these are the five areas we're going to talk about over the next period of time in this class, however long that may be. You have questions, sir? Forte piano. That was funny, Daryl. I know. That's what's so funny about it. Forte is an Italian term having to do with dynamic range. Piano is a Italian word having to do with dynamic range. Piano doesn't mean that. That's not what that is. Piano means soft. Forte means loud. Comes from the same Italian root from which we get the word fortress, meaning strong. Piano received its name by its conceiver, whose name was Bartolomeo Cristofiore. Built the first one of those. Didn't look like that, didn't sound like that, but the technology was there. And how it got its name is from the Italian musical terms forte and piano. And we say piano, but they say piano, like stuffed shirts do. You know. And What happened was, as he was tinkering around in his harpsichord shop, he was a harpsichord maker. And what a harpsichord is, it's a stringed instrument like that with keys. And when you push a key down, a little jack goes up, and on this jack is a little feather quill. And as the jack goes by the string, the quill plucks it, and it goes plink. And when it comes back down, it dampens the string. So you hear plinky, plink, plink, plinky, plink. That's what a harpsichord sounds like. The interesting thing about a harpsichord, if you strike the key hard or strike it soft, it doesn't make any difference. When the jack goes up, it plucks the string at the same strength, which means it's always the same volume. And to make a harpsichord softer or louder, you add more strings or take strings away. The only way to make it softer or louder is to change the amount of number of strings or to put a damper across the strings to make it very soft. Now, so it's basically a non-expressive instrument as far as a keyboard. So that's why harpsichord players just kind of push keys and they don't move around because they're not being expressive. They're just making notes go by. There's no change of volume. Most Renaissance and pre-Renaissance musical instruments had very little change of volume. Even the recorders, the sack butts and hot boys and VLs and VL de gambas and all the string instruments, they had very little expression. The first expressive instruments were the violins, but the earliest expressive instrument was the clavichord. And what a clavichord is, it's a little keyboard instrument with strings going this way instead of that way. And the key is real long and it goes out. And on the end of the key is a little brass button or a little brass knob of some sort. When you push the key down, a little brass knob comes up and bangs on the string and holds on. And where it holds onto the string, it resonates one end of it. And that creates the pitch. And this thing, if you hit it hard, it would play louder than if you hit it soft. So it was expressive. But the dynamic range of a clavichord was from piano to mezzo piano, which isn't very far. It got a little bit louder and a little bit softer. Because, these things were small enough to sit on your lap. They're just little tiny things. Well, this guy was fooling around. Basically, what he was doing was fooling around in his shop, putting clavichord knobs on harpsichord jacks. And a big harpsichord with lots of string length, so lots of resonance, to see if he could make a new sounding keyboard instrument. So he did this and shoved this thing in and started playing, and lo and behold, it played soft and loud, both, by how hard or soft he struck the key. So he called his new instrument soft loud, piano forte. So that is a soft loud. Now, what he came up with and what we have today is a much different instrument, but it's still soft loud, and the same basic concept and technology is there. But it's from the Italian term meaning soft music and loud music. So forte piano is loud to soft quickly. See, in fact, there is still made by purists a piano instrument called a forte piano, which is a much smaller, scrunched up version of a piano, very soft, very delicate, very tinkly. They're not built bodacious like the piano. They never conceived of the gigantic 9-foot pianos we have today. They were much smaller, delicate sounding. I've heard them at Smithsonian Institute, actual ones from Mozart's day. They're just rather dull. I'd be bored stiff if that's what we had to play today. But then again, they didn't have the 200 voice choir singing Messiah either. They did it with 5 people. Yeah. First time it was performed, it was 9 people. And we think of, the Hallelujah Chorus, this great big thing. It was 23 players and 9 singers. it wasn't that big a deal. And that's the time the King of England stood up. And he was really impressed with that great big group, where we have to have quite a bit of volume level and that sort of thing. Well, back to expression then. We're going to talk about, incidentally, piano, mezzo piano, and all that later when we talk about Italian musical terms and give you all of the dynamic terms so you know what they are. I use them. The problem that we have in music ministry here is that I interchangeably use English and Italian. Because I learn the Italian, it's part of my vocabulary, just like pizza and soup and, frangos are part of my vocabulary. Especially frangos are part of my vocabulary. And Christmas is a wonderful time because of frangos. So I can be, in a rehearsal going on and I'll say, do this cantabile or something. And it just comes out because it's in there just like the English is in there. And it says something to me more than you know, taking three sentences to explain what I mean when the word cantabile explains it just fine. And so I try not to use it very much. I really do. But I don't always. Sometimes the only way to say it is to say it in Italian. And so, like, for instance, the term rubato. If I say to Keith, I want that rubato, he knows what I mean. If I didn't say rubato, do you know what I have to say? What I want you to do, Keith, is I want you to adjust the rhythm gradually. Now, don't go out of the tempo, but move the rhythm around and kind of twist with some notes, but shorten up others, and move the rhythm around, and be, take your liberty with the rhythm, but, you know, don't get out of the tempo, and, you know, it's a lot easier to say rubato, please, and go on with rehearsal, right? So, plus, it increases the efficiency of rehearsal, if I can say things like that. We haven't developed an English word that is an exact equivalent of rubato. It doesn't exist. So you're stuck with that one anyway. Okay. Let's then learn some slower material. If you have this material in your notebooks, incidentally, if you're new this semester, you're responsible to always bring a music notebook to class. File 266, It Is in the Love of God. Many people may not have this. 266. Rubato? So it sounds. R-U-B-A-T-O. Mm-hmm. Like rutabaga, yeah.
Adjust, but we're going to learn it as written.
Okay, sir. Excuse me? B flat. B flat, yes. B flat is in banana flat. Mine says 10:55. Not very loud this semester. I don't know what happened. I missed them all today. Camp meeting, yeah. Which one? Okay, good. I did it.